Planning on traveling this summer? Make saving at the pump part of your plans with 2x the fuel points from Harris Teeter. It's easy. Download your eVic coupon, and for every dollar you spend with your Vic card, you'll get 2 fuel points. That's up to $1 per gallon on quality fuel at participating BP and Harris Teeter fuel centers. Download your eVic coupon today and save money at the pump all summer long with eVic and Harris Teeter fuel points.
Thank you for downloading Tucker Center Talks, a podcast from the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota and a co-production with WISP Sports. I'm your host for Tucker Center Talks, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, director of the Tucker Center. The Tucker Center is a first of its kind world-class research center and thought leader that works to accelerate systems change for girls and women in sport. Tucker Center Talks is a place where I get to talk to, amplify, and support my female colleagues, amazing women who study sport and gender. We let the data tell the story, and we talk about the ways in which our research and data can create social change and disrupt the status quo to make sport a better place. In this podcast, I'm talking with colleague Dr. Cheryl Cookey, who is a professor of American Studies and Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies at the University of Purdue, Purdue University, fellow Big Ten colleague. She is the co-author of No Slam Dunk, Gender Sport and the Unevenness of Social Change. She's the past president of NASS, current editor of the Sociology of Sport Journal, one of the most high-impact journals in our field, a Tucker Center affiliated scholar and co-author, dog mom, and one of the most respected critical feminist gender and sports scholars around the globe. Welcome, Dr. Cookey.
Thank you, Nicole, for having me. And thank you for that generous introduction.
Well, I could have gone on and on. That's just my short accolades for you. You have a long, distinguished vita, but and you and I could fill a whole year worth of podcasts talking about your research related to girls and women in sport. But I want to focus on your latest and greatest study that you just released, the much-awaited installment of the longitudinal study of women and men's sports in televised news in the U.S., aptly titled, which I have to say, out of all the scholars I know, your titles of your journal articles are some of the most creative and catchy and best. So the newest title is One and Done, The Long Eclipse of Women's Televised Sport. So give us the overview. What is this study? What has it been over time? Then we'll get into some of the key takeaways.
Yeah, so this is a longitudinal study where we look at the quality and quantity of coverage of men's and women's sports on televised news and highlight shows. And so the study originated in 1989. I was not yet a co-author or collaborator at that point. I was still in high school, but my colleagues, Mike Messner and his colleague, Margaret Carlisle Duncan, were the founders, I guess, of this study, so to speak. So essentially at that point, it was looking at the local news some other aspects, dimensions of the study, but the local news affiliates in Los Angeles. And I can talk a little bit more about how the study came about, if that's of interest. But essentially what we do is every 5 years, we collect data. So 1989 and up and through 2019, every 5 years, using the same time frame for the sample and the same networks. We added SportsCenter in 1999, which is when I came into the study as Mike's research assistant when I was a graduate student at the University of Southern California. And then the most recent iteration, which the data collection was in 2019, we included the online daily newsletters for those same networks, their media platforms, and then as well the social media accounts of those networks. So looking at the official Twitter feeds for NBC Sports, ESPN, and then we also added ESPNW. ESPNW doesn't have its own network, television network. So we were able to add an ESPNW because we were also looking at online and social media data. And what we found over that course of that study, over the course of that time frame, is that in the 30 years that we've been doing this, there really hasn't been a whole lot of movement with respect to the quantitative coverage. In fact, in 1989, the amount of coverage devoted to women's sports was 5%. In 2019, we're essentially back where we started, where the local affiliates and ESPN Center were roughly around 5%. And so we've seen some slight fluctuations over time, but certainly nothing that's really moved the needle.
Right. And I will put the link to your article in the show notes and people can dig in, because the graphs that you have in here really tell a compelling story about the quantity of coverage. And my understanding of what you do, let's just say you record ESPN Sports Center, I don't know, from 5 to 6 p.m. and you see what percentage of seconds or minutes are devoted to women's sport, and then you quantify that. So this is not just you and I sitting down watching SportsCenter and sort of making notes and like, oh, there's a story on women's sport, or there wasn't any stories on women's sport. You have a very detailed methodology that tracks this over time. And I think that's really important to note. And the fact that we're, 20 years out, 30 years out, and we're the same percentage of coverage.
Yes. And in fact, when you slice up the data, so you're correct in terms of the methodology, this is a systematic analysis. We look at the same networks, the same broadcast times. And we essentially, sit down and count the seconds. We look at things like the gender competitive level. We also include things like interviews and if there's game highlights included and some other elements related to kind of the production. And so when you slice that data up, in fact, the 5% that we see today is somewhat, I don't want to say misleading, but a big driver of that, and this is where the title of the paper, One and Done, comes from, is that we just so happen, and this was by accident only, it just so happened that our sampling time frame coincided with the end of the Women's World Cup, the 2019 FIFA World Cup.
And oh, so, interesting.
And
okay.
So when you take that piece out of the data, in fact, that 5%, 6% number drops down to about, I think it was 3.something%.
So it's actually worse.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, we're laughing because at this point, what else can you do but laugh? Otherwise, we'd, give up the will to live. So in fact, it was really driven by the World Cup. And we can talk a little bit more about that. We did see slightly more coverage in the online newsletters and the social media accounts. But again, so, slightly better being going from, 5% to 9 to 10%. We're not talking like huge numbers here. And what's interesting there is if you slice that data up, most of that coverage is because we were including ESPNW, its newsletter, and the ESPNW Twitter feed, right? You take that out and those numbers drop dramatically as well. And so, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking, so the quantity of data is one aspect that you track.
Mm-hmm.
But, I have so many questions and so many thoughts. But let's get to the quality, like what's in there? Because okay, quantity is one thing, and we could say, right, it's half full because it went up from you know, 5 years ago, it went up a couple percents from, I'm looking at the graph on SportsCenter, from 2% to 5.7%. So yay, it went up. But if you say, do we take out the Women's World Cup, it's probably not that much different. But also yay, it didn't go backwards. It didn't go to 1%. So, you know, it's like this half full, half empty kind of thing. So it's paradoxical. So let's get to the what is like in there, though? What are the qualitative ways that women's sport are portrayed that we need to pay attention to?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, because I think that's an important element of this as well. That when you look at the percentages, the numbers tell one story, but the qualitative data tells an even richer story about what does that coverage look like. So when we see women enter into the frame or enter into the coverage, how are they portrayed? How are women's sports presented or represented to viewers and audiences? And this is where we do see some change. And I hate to call it positive change, but we do see in the quality of coverage, such that in the late 80s, throughout the 90s, the kind of general pattern in the qualitative data was one where women were presented in, you know, highly sexualized ways, objectifying women and women athletes. Women were portrayed as kind of the butts of jokes, right? The kind of humorous sexualization of women and women athletes. By the early 2000s, mid 2000s, that pattern started to shift. And so throughout the 2000s, we saw a shift in the pattern, so that instead of portraying women as sex objects, the sport media kind of got the clue that, okay, that, you know, that overt sexism is no longer acceptable. And so the pattern shifted to one of portraying women and women athletes as the girlfriend, the wife, the girl next door, also very kind of the mother, right? So also very conventional gender portrayals, right? So for example, a segment with an interview featuring Candace Parker, the anchor who was interviewing her ask, well, how do you balance being a professional athlete and being a new mom? And gosh, that must be really challenging for you, right? So we see these kinds of ways that athletes aren't really portrayed as athletes, right? As kind of married.
Right. And also reinforces this dominant, hetero, yes, sexy, femininity norm that gets reinforced and reproduced.
Exactly. And so, yeah. And so by the mid 2010s, when we were looking at the qualitative coverage, then we saw another shift in the patterns, whereby those sort of stereotypical portrayals, whether it be the kind of hypersexualization or the kind of conventional gendered motherhood, girlfriend, heteronormativity, now we see athletes being portrayed as athletes. Yay! This is what we've been sort of been advocating for throughout the course of the study is a respectful portrayal, a respectful representation of women and women's sports. In fact, though, when we dug a little bit deeper and looked at those production values that I was mentioning earlier, right? So the ways in which kind of stories are portrayed such that we get the excitement, right? So the verbal commentary, the colorful language and descriptors, the highlights from the game itself, the post-game interviews or the pre-game interviews, right? All of the kind of bells and whistles that surround sport media news content, right, were absent in the women's segments. And so a women's segment, the way in which those were produced was much more bland. The verbal delivery was flat monotone. We didn't see all the bells and whistles. It was just kind of a matter of fact, you know, this is what happened. Here's who played. Here was, you know, who, this is person scored. This is the end of the game. Okay, and now let's move on to the men, where all the excitement is. Yeah, the end, right? And the segments were shorter. You know, there were all kinds of ways that difference got portrayed. Why I don't see this as a positive shift.
Now, Now we're still back in 2010,
well, this
right?
Was, this is kind of the 2010. So this is capturing the 2014 and even the 2019 data. And we describe this as gender bland sexism. And I can talk a little bit more about that. But partly why we don't necessarily see this as a quote unquote positive change, even though, again, those gender very overt sexist gender stereotypes have sort of fallen away. But what we argue is now sexism is operating in these overt ways, right? And so it's in this kind of bland, monotone, flat delivery that communicates to viewers and audiences that women's sports are less exciting, less interesting, and that it's less exciting and less interesting in a kind of almost seemingly objective way, right? Because we're getting men's sports presented in the same kind, you know, quote unquote, the same kind of way as women's sports. But unless you're actually tracking and watching over time and sort of measuring all of these different things, the average viewer probably doesn't pick up on it in a kind of real overt way where, you know, a segment on a naked bungee jumper, right? That's clearly an instance of sexism, right? Or a feature segment on Sable, you know, a professional wrestler who appeared in Playboy, right? And that was the focus of the segment, right? That's pretty obvious that sexism is happening. But if you're just watching highlights and it's, you know, the just the facts, monotone delivery, you might not pick up on that in the same kind of way. And so I would actually suggest, and we argue this in the paper, right, that subtle form of sexism can be just as damaging.
And you tell me, because you're the one that looked at the data, but are most of the commentators on the mainstream networks and ESPN who are participating in this gender bland sexism, are they mostly men or are these women as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, just I think overall, if we're looking at these mainstream sport news media spaces, we know from the research that those spaces tend to be dominated by men, and in particular white men. For our study specifically, the commentators are primarily men and primarily white men, although there are men of color who are commentators and anchors, and there are women who are commentators and anchors. For our study, it was primarily, I don't think we had any women of color in the sample. So these are, it's all white women who are taking on these roles, or presumably white women. I mean, race can be challenging to determine based on, you know, if we're not looking at how people are self-identifying. But what's interesting is that they're really, and we didn't necessarily do a systematic analysis of this, but we saw the same kind of patterns in the coverage, regardless of whether or not the person delivering that content was a man or a woman.
As I said, this has been a much awaited data set because your work is cited so frequently by many news sources as kind of the go-to statistic in this area. So what else do we need to know, things to kind of watch out for, to attune ourselves to in this gender bland sexism world of women's sports?
Yeah, you know, I would say if we could sort of pull the lens back, you know, from our study, and I think the study is important because it really provides a longitudinal lens, right? It provides a sort of wide scope of just sort of within this particular space of sport news media, just the lack of change, and it offers us a way to sort of think about, you know, why is it, given all the other kinds of changes that we're seeing in the world of women's sports with respect to, you know, the increases in audiences, the increases, I mean, that the Tucker Center has talked about, right? The increases of people going to games, buying season tickets, the increased ratings in television, the increased kind of market potential, right, that we've seen talked about. All of these changes, right? And of course, the increase in opportunities and participation. Why is it that this kind of one segment of the sport media seems just so entrenched in a really anachronistic kind of understanding of the world of sports? And I think
it's disproportionate and not reflecting reality.
It's not reflecting reality, but what I think is important for us to think about is the spaces where change is happening, right? And the spaces where that change or where that reality is being reflected. And this is something I think that over the course of the 30 years is really important to acknowledge is the kind of the way in which online platforms, social media, is really, I think, shifting the ways that we think about and we talk about and we engage it with women's sports. That the kind of acknowledgement of inequalities, right? I'm just thinking of, you know, the recent example in the NCAA women's basketball tournament, right? That was a story that came about in part because of social media, right? So there's a kind of visibility that we see now that these conversations aren't just conversations that you and I are having, right? But these are conversations that are happening across the board. And so when we expand out our view to sort of look at those non-mainstream spaces, right? To look at these pockets and these niche out, you know, what we would call in the literature, right? Niche outlets, right? So podcasts and blogs that are dedicated to women's sports, it's a much different reality that's being presented to sports fans. The problem though, Nicole, that with that is that those, to access those spaces requires a lot of labor, right? It requires,
you have to
know that they exist somehow. You have to seek those out. You have to curate your social media feed. Whereas following men's sports is just as easy as, you know, logging,
turning on the TV,
logging in, you know, enter something into a Google browser, log into your computer, whatever, you know, open up your app on your smartphone. It doesn't take the same kind of work. And also I think the issue is about, I mean, we could talk about resources for those niche outlets and the kind of disparity. So I think in some ways it's good to see that those spaces exist out there. And I think they exist out there in ways that maybe, not to say that there weren't those niche markets or niche media platforms in the past, right? I'm thinking of
Women Talk Sports.
Yeah, or even like, you know, yeah, the magazines. Oh gosh, what was the one? There was a Women in
Sports Illustrated for Women.
Illustrated for Women, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Women's Sport and Fitness that are all no longer with us on this earth. But let me ask you this, because I really am interested to hear what you say. So, okay, so we've got all this attention, you know, maybe not mainstream, but we've got pay equity issues. We've got women owners of teams. We've got women, you know, leaders. We've got women in men's sports coaching, and that's got a lot of visibility. We've got lots of record numbers of girls and women playing sports. So why is it? This is the million-dollar question, everyone. Why is it that the media coverage does not reflect reality? What is going on? Why? Please enlighten.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, that's the million-dollar question, right? I think there's, well, for our study, if we're talking specifically about our data, one of the things that we point to is the fact that at least on the local affiliates in Los Angeles, some of the anchors and commentators who were looking at today were anchors and commentators back in the day when the study first began, right?
You're kidding.
No. So right. So it's essentially the same set of people over the course of time. That's one issue. The other issue, I think, you know, if we're looking at SportsCenter, specifically in ESPN, I think that ESPNW and in some ways we've seen this. You mentioned Sports Illustrated for Women earlier, right? That in some ways these niche outlets like ESPNW or what we might call, I'm just using that term, niche outlet. Is that? I mean, yeah.
No, okay. That's good.
Okay. So
you know, non-mainstream.
So the you get the sort of like offshoot right from ESPN, ESPNW. And so the content then migrates into that space, right? And so ESPN as a network, as a media entity can say, well, we don't need to cover women's sports on ESPN because it's over here in this other space. And what we say, what we argue in the paper is that, you know, it allows ESPN to remain ESPN-M.
The worldwide leader of sport.
Men's sports, yeah.
Men's sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so ESPN, M as in Mary, right? ESPNW, W women, right? Then that's where the women's sports content goes. And so then for the kind of general sports fan, you enter into this space and it remains that kind of male dominated consumption space for you, right? And you engage right. in your fandom in that kind of way. And I think that, I don't know if I'm necessarily getting to the why question here, but you know, I think unfortunately, oftentimes those women only spaces, they're important, right? But they also then sort of they sort of remove accountability, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
The system doesn't have to change.
Yes.
Right. And you've always been so good at arguing the point that, you know, media often doesn't like to take the responsibility for creating interest in women's sport. And this is precisely another data point to help prove your point. It's like, well, we only cover what people are interested in. And that doesn't happen to be women's sport, but it's not our fault because we're just following the consumer. It's like, but you're creating consumer interest. And so I think that's such an important argument I've heard you make so many times.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's really easy. And I think, I feel like this is shifting and changing a little bit, but it's been very easy in the past for sport media. And I'm talking, you know, kind of mainstream legacy sport media, right? To sort of place the responsibility, to place the onus on the audience, on the viewers, on the spectators and the fans, and just sort of, you know, hold their hands up and say, hey, we're just subject to market forces. This is all about supply and demand. We're just not seeing a demand for women's sports. We are seeing a demand for men's sports. So we have to give you know, viewers and audiences what they want. We have to give them what they want to see. And I think, you know, in some ways, why it's easy, again, because it allows the kind of status quo to remain. It doesn't require any change. And it doesn't require folks who have benefited from a system where women have been excluded to then change that system, right? And to be more inclusive. And you know, audiences and fans only have a certain degree of voice, or at least in the past, right? Have only had a certain degree of voice and ability to say, hey, I want this. And even in fact, I think when we, you know, the examples that we've seen where people clearly are excited and interested, and that interest is demonstrated in very like empirically, I guess empirical ways, right? Television ratings, bodies in the stands, right? We've seen this one and done before, you know, in World Cups of past, for example. And so I think it's, what's been interesting to me is to see that the ways in which the target for women's sports shifts, right? And so there's always going to be something that the media, these legacy media outlets will point to signal, okay, well, we're still not there yet, right? It's like, wait, all these like people coming to the stadium, the Rose Bowl to watch, you know, the 99ers. Well, you know, they just came to that stadium, right? It's not enough. Or over a billion people worldwide tune in to watch the 2019 Women's World Cup. Well, you know.
That's interesting. So regardless of fans of women's sport demonstrating interest in women's sport, the target's moving. And over time, we still haven't seen respectful and proportionate and reality-based coverage of women's sport. So we'll have to wait another 5 years to see if it changes and goes up or it does not. And I wish I could, you know, I wish we could talk and report better news, but you know, it's the question we always get, how do you do this work? Because it's really quite depressing. It's like, well, yes, it is. And if we didn't do the work, imagine what it would be like if we didn't call attention to it. So I have to believe that your work and calling people out and networks out does make a difference.
I would hope so. It might not be, that difference might not be reflected in the numbers themselves, but certainly in some of the qualitative data. I think the fact that, the arguments that I get from students, they're not there anymore, right? I don't think that anyone can genuinely make a claim that people aren't interested in women's sports in the same kinds of ways that they have in the past. So I mean, it does give me some hope that I do believe that there are spaces where we can see that change, and there are spaces of hope. And certainly, I think, podcasts like this and other, outlets that are focused and devoted to covering sports and women's sports in a realistic way. I think that also gives me hope. I don't have hope in 5 years that the data will be any different because, over the last, I hate to spoil it for your listeners.
Right. Yeah. We let the data tell the story and the story is pretty grim. Yes. Okay. So let's pivot here as we wrap up. For all those young female aspiring gender and sports scholars out there, what's the one piece of advice you would give them?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, gosh. Oh, I have so many thoughts in my head, but I'm not sure if they're appropriate for this podcast.
This is a PG podcast, say, Dr. Cookie. So
I would say that the voice that matters is your own. And never
Absolutely.
Discount that. Never let
and never
someone
discount
else
that.
Silence you. Never let someone else take your voice away from you. The most powerful thing that I think we have is our voice.
That's great advice. And I think as young women and young scholars, sometimes we struggle finding our voice. And it's not until we get older where we're like, I got a lot to say and you better listen up.
Yeah, I think as the kids like to say, you have zero F's left to give. That's the PG version. I think embracing some of that and being authentic and being true to you, to who you are. And when I say voice, I mean voice in any kind of, not just, speaking voice, but your writing voice, your communicative voice, the way that you move through the world and enact social change. I mean, I think that's, kind of thinking about voice in that broad sense.
Mm-hmm. So. That's good. Okay. So we're ending with the speed round. All right, here we go. Who is your favorite badass woman right now?
Oh gosh. Speed round. Oh, this is, the pressure is on. My favorite badass, Michelle Obama.
Okay. Good choice. What is one book you're reading right now that you're enjoying, if you are?
Educated. I'm forgetting her name. And the book's not here. It's Tara.
I know. Don't you hate that? You're like, I'm reading this great book and I can't remember the author.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yes.
Educated. One influential female scholar that has influenced your work.
Influential female scholar that has influenced my work. Dunja Antoniewicz.
Ah, yes. My colleague at the University of Minnesota, great scholar in her own right. And a little teaser for the listeners, Dr. Cookie and Dr. Antoniewicz are working on a book together. Do you want to give a little teaser on your book?
Yeah. And I should say this is really unfair too, to make me just pick one.
I know.
Because the list could just go on and on. So teaser for the book. So this is a book where we are looking at sport media, and we're expanding kind of how we think about sport media. So not just, as we were talking about earlier, kind of the legacy or mainstream sport media, but to look at any kind of media spaces that are writing about, talking about, telling stories about sport. And so in thinking about the ways in which feminism gets articulated in the kinds of stories we tell about women's sports, and how it is that kind of feminist ideals are often shaping the ways that sport media are covering sports, talking about sport, women's sports, and telling stories about women's sports. And so we're really kind of intentionally seeking out those spaces, as opposed to this other study where it's basically we just tune on the TV and let the kind of content dictate the analysis. And we did that kind of intentional analysis because we really wanted to, we really believe that there was more going on in the world of sports that we wanted to capture.
Absolutely. Do you, and now my understanding is the book is submitted a draft.
Yes.
Is that correct? Okay.
Yes. And we've got reviewer reports back, which is good. And we're working on revisions, and the publisher is anticipating maybe an end of 2021 publication date. This is Peter Lang Publishers. Yeah.
So we will have the two of you back on to tell us all about your book. Do you have a working title?
We do, but I don't think either one of us is really excited about
okay.
it. And you put pressure
Stay
on
tuned.
Me. You put pressure on me with the title thing earlier, so I want to make sure it's really
okay.
good.
All right. That's true. All right. So stay tuned. This will be a great book for listeners of this podcast who really do deeply care about sport and gender scholarship. So thank you, Dr. Cookie, for being a part of Tucker Center Talks. This is the first of many. We'll have you back on. We have so much to talk about, but thanks for your work and your insights.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
So be sure to check out our many free evidence-based resources on our website at tuckercenter.org. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can find the show notes with links and resources for this episode at wisports.com. Look for Tucker Center Talks under the Listen tab, where you'll find more conversations from the world of women's sport. Thank you for listening and helping us turn up the volume on women's sport. That's a wrap for Tucker Center Talks. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie. Give yourself grace, support others, let the data tell the story. I'm signing off to make a difference in the lives of girls and women in sport.